Hey, everybody, welcome back to 90 Feet Away. On today's episode, we have Danny Zlotnick, ex-baseball player, current musician, and overall good guy, talking about his struggles with yips and mental health and how to get through it. Stay tuned. Born and raised in Westchester. I'm not going to really get into your early years, like Little League and stuff like that.
I was good.
I'm assuming you crossed that off.
I'm
assuming you were really good in Little League. You played Somers High School. Really impactful player, you know, pretty much from early on. When do you start getting interest from schools, and what types of schools were interested in you? When did you know you had what it took to be a player at the next level?
That's a really good question, because I always grew up being good in Little League, and even in high school, through kind of my junior year, I just thought I was playing baseball and good at baseball and this could be fun. And I started playing for some travel teams. I played for Shrub Oak American Legion. And some of the guys on the team were like, you know, are you thinking about playing in college? Were you thinking? And I started asking them, you know, what do you think about SUNY Cortland? What do you think about this? What do you think about that? And they go, Cortland? We're talking D1. You're that good. And I was kind of like, I don't know if that's true, because it was never a focus of why I was playing the game. And then after my junior year, that I think it was July 1st hit, I went to go visit at the school I eventually went to, which was Marist College. Shut my phone off to go on this tour, and I get back to the car, turn my phone back on, and I had like 12 voicemails from Division I coaches in the area that were very interested in me as a pitcher, as an outfielder, as both. And that was that kind of moment, go, oh, I'm going to have a decision to make.
That's pretty interesting, right? Very rarely do you get a two-way guy at D3. I coached D3. I think in all the years, maybe we had two. That were good enough, you know, to do both things. You jumped right into Marist, but that's not where you originally committed to. Was the attraction to UVM originally because they looked at you as a two-way? Was everyone looking at you as a two-way? We've had some incredibly special guys come out of here, and what I felt was kind of like, they would dangle the carrot that you could possibly do both, but it's really not so realistic at the Division I level because it's two full-time jobs, right?
Right.
Let's just step back and tell me what happened at UVM, because this is one of those stories that people don't know happens. It actually happens. Yeah. So please walk us through.
So I fell in love with the school, and you know, people who know me now know that I'm a musician. And I fell in love with Burlington, Vermont. And I said, this is a place where I see myself thriving as a person, as more than just a baseball player. There are music venues. There are coffee houses where I could go be a musician and play baseball. The coaches, at the time at least, you know, were very open to me being a two-way player. And I think that was exciting, because in my life, that's what I did. I went to the ballpark. I hit first and played center field, and then I would come in and pitch and do the same thing. And you know, I didn't want to stop doing that.
How old were you when you committed to UVM? Were you a
junior? I was my senior year, early on in my senior year.
Early senior year.
Yes.
Okay, go on.
And in the winter, I'm driving around with one of my buddies. I get a call from the coach at UVM. I said, this is kind of weird, you know, it's kind of an odd hours. And he said, Dan, this is the toughest call I've had to make. Because of financial issues, they have had to drop the baseball program, the baseball and softball at UVM.
So UVM at the time was a Division I baseball program.
Yes.
It was a Division I softball program.
Yes.
What people don't understand about baseball softball is we love it, but it is not a top revenue producing sport.
Right.
So it doesn't create a whole lot of finances for the school, where football does, which is why 52 guys get scholarships,
right,
and basketball does, and everyone else gets a scholarship. So you're now, let's call it Christmas time,
yep,
senior year, and it's, oh, Now what?
Exactly. Okay. And that was, you know, I had turned down more money at Marist to go to UVM, and that's how much Burlington really kind of drew me in. And, you know, it's kind of this, oh, I hope Marist still has a roster spot for me. I hope anywhere still has a roster spot for me. And I called up Dennis Heliot, who was the head coach at the time. I said, you know, do you have any money left for me? Because this was my very close second choice, but to compare Burlington and Poughkeepsie, it was an easy choice for me. And he said, no, this is great. We still have, you know, about 90% of what we offered. And I said, great, let's do it. Then over the summer, I start playing American Legion ball, get to my car after the game, turn my phone on, and I had a message from Dennis Healy that he was leaving. So I hadn't even gotten to college yet, and I have now missed out on the school that was my top choice and then the coach that had recruited me. So my whole entry into college baseball was just kind of pulled out from under me.
Please don't lose that train of thought. Audience, this is something really important that he's hitting on here. I have an incredibly big issue with eighth graders and ninth graders that verbally commit to college. It's meaningless. It's nonsense. For reasons that Dan is just describing right now, I commit my son to a Division I school in eighth grade or ninth grade. The coach could leave. The baseball program could fold. My son could just turn into a terrible baseball player. For all of those reasons, it's very difficult to do that. So when I hear eighth graders verbaling to Tulane or LSU, it's horseshit. Please go on, Danny.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the same thing with just an eighth grader or anyone deciding what they want to do with their life. And to project into the future like that is so difficult, and it puts so much pressure on you to live up to certain expectations, or and you tell your parents in eighth grade, hey, I want to go play at Ohio State, and then 2 years later you don't want to play at Ohio State anymore, but your parents have bought all the gear, you've got all the gear, and now, you know, everything's different. So I still have my Vermont sweatshirt. I still wear it.
Love it.
But that's about all I get out of the University of Vermont.
And just for the audience to understand, when does it actually mean something? Not until you sign your NLI, right?
Right.
Your National Letter of Intent. Once that document is signed, then you are officially committed. They've committed to you. Money is put aside for you. Go on.
Although with Vermont, I did sign. And
then they folded
the program.
Right.
So that was
right.
The only instance where that was the case. So, you know, I thought I was going to apply to one school. I ended up applying to two schools. And
so Healy, who was the guy that brought you in twice, he's now gone.
Yes. And he went to Wake Forest and built an incredible pitching lab, and their team is well on their way.
Oh, that's awesome. And obviously they're still doing really well,
yes.
Wake. So now you're at Marist. And happy to have the opportunity, I'm assuming. You're a freshman. A lot of playing time as a freshman?
A pretty good amount. Yeah, I led off and played right field in the first game of the season.
So you were a two-way?
Yes. Yeah,
wow.
And I was able to keep that going. I was able to show enough in the fall that, you know, I could pitch. I could play the outfield. I could do both. I had, you know, I always prided myself on my work ethic. You know, we talked about showing up early. When you're a two-way guy, you show up early, you stay late, you do extra things.
Right.
And I did get a significant amount of playing time, mostly out of the bullpen on the weekends. Spot starts in the middle of the week.
Sure, sure.
I think I hit about 230.
Okay.
You know, so it was
freshman,
serviceable
a
freshman.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me it was the natural ups and downs of being a college freshman.
Sure.
There were some games I'd come in and I'd feel like I was throwing 92 and – nobody could touch me. And other games where I felt like I was throwing 92 and everyone touched me.
Beach ball.
Or times where I came in, I was throwing 85 and getting people out.
Sure.
Other times, 85 and couldn't find the zone.
Right.
I all kind of chalked it up to kind of the growing pains of going from high school baseball to college baseball.
Sure.
But then I went away that summer and I played in what is now the Perfect Game Collegiate League. At the time, it was the NYCBL.
Sure.
I played for the Amsterdam Mohawks. And just
there's a whole lot going on in Amsterdam, New York, boy.
The Mohawks are everything. And it was great. It was like, you know, I was finally, I coming from a Division I school, I finally was playing in front of crowds of 1,000-plus sure. every night. And my velocity went up. My command was as good as it had ever been. I had one of the ranked top sliders in the league and just absolutely dealt. I think I was 6-0. I had 60 strikeouts in 50 innings, something like that. And, and it was pretty untouchable. And then I got back to Marist. And this again, this is my coach who didn't recruit me, didn't necessarily like my style. You probably can't tell on the podcast, but I'm not a huge guy. I'm 5'10", 200 pounds at the time. And, you know, I was being taught to throw like the 6'4 lefties who threw 87 miles an hour. And it didn't work for me.
Why? Shouldn't every pitcher be cookie cutter? Shouldn't we teach every hitter how to hit the same way?
Right.
Is it everybody aren't a judge? And yes. we can teach launch angle to guys that are 5'10" and not 6'10"?
Yes. And so that was the first time where I felt, as someone who prides myself on my hard work, on being coachable, that I felt like I was resisting coaching from an authority figure, which I had always respected and always kind of put on a pedestal.
But frustrating to you because you just came off arguably the best summer of your life.
Exactly.
At the highest level you've played at. Why is this guy messing with me?
Yeah. And not to mention, I came back and I was our Saturday starter my sophomore year. I started the season 6-0, had a 3-something ERA. And
so let's mess with this.
So let's mess with this.
Okay.
And let's start changing how you grip this. And you should be throwing this kind of
sinker.
Do you
understand why that happens?
I think it's because a lot of coaches want hands in the success.
It has nothing to do with hands. Hands becomes like the next part. It's ego. My stamp has to be on that kid, right? It wasn't good enough that he got here on his own, and he's incredibly successful. I have to be the guy.
Right.
The best coaches are the coaches that understand what makes you different than the other guy and that helps you tweak things you may be struggling with.
Right, right. And not to mention the personalities. So my personality, I work really hard, but in terms of interpersonally, I would prefer a little bit more laid back.
Okay.
This was a very intense situation to be in, and if you didn't do something well, you were yelled at, you were punished.
So like more of a militant type.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And so, you know, as when I am coaching now, that is something I'm very aware of.
Sure.
Which of my players needs what from me? And I understand that there's, you know, when you're coaching a team,
35 kids.
So much, there's only so much that can be done. But what happened was I lost total confidence in myself. I felt like my personality and my character was being attacked because I was frustrated with the coaching. And I ended up kind of working myself into what I consider is a mild condition of the yips.
Mm.
So I was still pitching and still getting on the mound, but now instead of 88 to 90, 92, I was 82 to 84 with no command, no confidence.
So let me just walk through real quickly for the audience. We use this term yips. It's very difficult to describe what the yips are. Some guys are able to work through the yips. As Danny is saying, he still may have been 82 instead of 92. He was able to throw a baseball. Some people are not able to throw a baseball, and I'm not just talking about kids. I mean, there have been major leaguers, Chuck Knoblauch, Steve Sachs, guys that, you know, had very successful careers that woke up one day, and it's truly not the physical. We know that the body works. It's the mind. It's I'm overthinking every movement that I make. I didn't feel this or I didn't feel that. And for me, one of the most frustrating things is you take a kid like Danny, who was built a little differently, more personable, more outgoing, more laid back, and this ruined the fun of the game. So when we're not having fun and we forget that at the end of the day, this is a game, then we start getting deep into our mind. And playing any sport, the mind is the worst place to live. Go on.
Yeah. And so I'm battling this. I went and played in the New England Collegiate League for the Newport Gulls. And same sort of thing. It was just I had about 80% of me. So I was – low
even
to mid-80s.
Away from Healy now. So you're yes. you're just second yes. guessing everything.
Oh, Healy was gone. This is a different thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
But away from your day-to-day yes. Maris stuff, yes. you still can't get out of your own way
right.
now.
So you go from thinking, oh, this is a situational thing, to now, oh, this is following me, to a different state, to a different team, to a different coach who I loved, and players around me that I loved, situations that were ideal for having a great summer of playing baseball. And I still couldn't figure it out. So I went back to Marist my junior year. And this is where I think this podcast is so valuable, because I didn't know that what was happening to me. All I knew is that I just all of a sudden sucked.
And there was nobody to talk to. There was nobody to help you through this stuff.
Exactly.
Sure.
And my parents are amazing, and they found, I don't remember what his name was, but he was called the Yip Doctor.
Okay.
And I had some phone calls. I'd go out to my car because I didn't want my roommates to know that I was talking to a psychological guy. I don't even know if he was a psychologist. And he did some sort of hypnotism kind of work that just got me back to feeling like myself, although it was very temporary. So I would go and, you know, I'd feel good for a day or two. Then I'd go out in the mound, and, you know, if first batter I walked in, or first batter gets a hit, all of a sudden the inning falls apart. And so I totally lost that ability to come back to the game and come back to myself, be a natural, free-flowing athlete that I was my entire life, and just play. And I lost all fun. It wasn't fun to go to practice. It wasn't fun to throw on the side.
So not fun. You're probably torturing yourself mentally,
totally.
Right?
Totally.
About the depression, because you're not feeling good.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
just not feeling good.
And you can't believe it. You're like,
what happened?
I've never had any injuries to this day.
Wow.
You know, significant arm injuries.
Right.
And I've seen myself throw the way I know that I can, but I haven't been able to explain why. And so I just said, all right, I got to get out of here.
So you leave Marist. Right, you need a new beginning, a new start, right? You head down south. How does that happen? Now, you go from a Division I school in Poughkeepsie yeah. to a Division II school in Florida, but to some people that may sound like a step back. People that don't understand the University of Tampa, their D2 program is better than any Northeast D1 program,
yes.
hands down.
And a lot of D1 programs around the country.
No question, yeah. but I'm yeah. comparing you being in
yes.
Poughkeepsie at
yes.
Marist. The level of play, the level of athlete at that school is off the charts, correct?
It's insane. Yeah.
So you walk in there now, you have a year left, and are you feeling good? Like, what changed? Was it environmental? Where are we at now?
So, you know, even to this point, I'm still saying to myself, all I need is a change of scenery. It didn't work in Newport, but maybe Tampa is the way to go. And to be around more of a winning culture, they've got an incredible history of winning there. I walk in and same you know, it's just, it's a different place. It's the same stuff. But on my exit meeting in the fall, coaches pull me in. They say, look, Dan, you are at the bottom of our pitching staff. This is just the facts, you know. And not to mention, in your inter-squad games, you're facing the best hitters in the country, so that's part of it too. But I went home and I said to them, I said, look, I've got maybe one semester left of baseball in my life. I just want to enjoy it. And this kind of cookie cutter style, it's not that Tampa didn't have that, but they at least asked. They said, what makes you good? What do you need to do?
Mm.
And I came home. I don't know if it was in this facility at the time, but I threw with my dad, and he and I would go to the facility over the winter, and he would just say the same things he told me when he was my coach in Little League, and it was just go back to what feels natural. And it had nothing to do with, you know, this wasn't a psychology thing.
How about I love you and have fun?
Yes, exactly. And it's not that my parents had ever put pressure on me
sure.
to get drafted. I had put that pressure on myself when you get a letter as a junior
sure.
in college, or after, you know, scouts talk to you after games. And so I go back to Tampa. First of all, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is January and it's 70 degrees down here. It's like, how did we not know about this?
Right, right, right.
And I just had the time of my life. I pitched 6 innings. I had 4 appearances and had the absolute time of my life because I felt like myself again. And it was so fun to be a part of a team that was winning. If that was very important to me, it was fun to focus on fun and not go, well, if I do this, then I'll get drafted. And if I have this summer, then this scout will see me. It was just go play baseball again.
Do you think that the coaching staff allowing you to be you helped in this process of kind of getting you to feel better?
It was the first step for sure. The other thing I did was I started seeing a therapist weekly. And this was not a sports psychologist. This was a licensed clinical social worker therapist. And or I don't know what the acronym is. But I went to this woman weekly, and we started just digging at why does throwing a baseball stress me out? Because you're throwing a baseball. Like, that's the bottom line, is you're throwing a baseball. This is not life and death stuff. But your brain doesn't know that. And your brain, because of the way that we grow up, because of the way that society is, because of the fact that we're human, we perceive things as threats that are not truly threats to our character, to our safety, to our health. All of these things had been kind of twisted up in my mind, and I just felt like everything finally was untwisted.
One thing you hit on, again, I just want to take a minute, and as a father of 3 athletes that played in college, I also want the audience to understand that the school your kid goes to is great. Who you're putting your children with for 4 years is ultimately the most important thing. Am I going to send my young man or my young daughter to a program and have them emasculated for 4 years? Or are they going to help in growth and development, not only on the field, but on and off the field? Are they going to take these young people and help them to adulthood? Those things were very important to me, because one of my favorite lines that I say to a lot of kids, both boys and girls, you're going to be professional, just probably not a professional ball player, mm-hmm. right? So we have to be prepared for that stuff down the road.
Yeah.
For me, the mental health part for you is so incredibly important in 2024, because when you were going through this stuff, like you said, you were trying to hide it, right?
Yeah.
It was almost embarrassing. Today,
not almost.
It was embarrassing. Yeah. So today, as we have hitting coaches and pitching coaches, we have mental performance coaches.
Totally.
It's no different than being in the gym or eating right, or I have to make sure that my mind is in the right place.
Yeah.
And in 2024, instead of 2012, right, it's only 12 years.
Right.
What might have been different for you at that point? So how important and what role did that play? And for how long did you do that, Dan? Because then we're going to get into how important that is for you now as a mentor to young kids. But but go ahead.
So if I didn't have that at that point, I would have continued to be miserable playing baseball. That would have been my last semester of baseball. And I don't know if I would want to be around the game anymore. You know, but because I had at least someone in my corner. It started with my parents, who kind of suggested, why don't you talk to someone about this? Because at that time, you're just internalizing it all, and you're going, I'm the worst. I'm not as good as I think I was. I am letting everybody around me down, and it's embarrassing because I'm getting a lot of scholarship money, and now it has become, oh, this is fun. This is baseball. This is, you know, my brain is now telling my body what I want it to do, not getting in the way of what my body wants to do. And so, you know, today it's.
And did they give you like exercises to do daily, weekly, like before I'm going to throw? Do I have a different routine than a non-throwing day?
It definitely started like that. And I remember working with my therapist and saying, I just want my brain to work differently, period. I don't want it to. I don't want to feel like I have like an index card in my back pocket with, you know, if this doesn't work, try this, which it started as that. And it was very helpful. It was starting from the moment I woke up feeling gratitude, feeling the feeling of confidence that I wanted to feel that I had lost. So coming up with ways to rebuild my mind so that I was that 12-year-old kid that was striking out 12 kids a game.
Right.
You know, that was the guy that was stepping on a mound at the University of Tampa or beyond. Not to mention at the end of my college career, I hooked up with what is now the Florida Baseball Armory. And that was, if you know the Texas Baseball Ranch,
sure.
Driveline,
sure.
It was a derivative of that, which was understanding how the brain tells the body how to move, understanding how the movement is taught. And no longer was I a conscious pitcher. I was putting myself in constraint drills. I was training high-speed muscles. And all of a sudden, with a therapist, with the type of training that I loved because I was now doing it unconsciously, my velocity shot up. And it was like, you know, I'm here working on command because I thought I had the yips.
Mm.
But all of a sudden, I can play baseball again. And, you know, for a while, I was like 92 to 95 from the left side, which allowed me to continue my career.
Which also is tough to hear, you know, as a dad, as a coach, because for me, I wish that stuff existed for you. The Florida Armory in Shrub Oak.
Right.
Right?
Right.
None of that existed.
No, and
so,
you know, I was from the, you know, even in high school, my coaches in high school were pretty good about being like, all right, just, you know, the dude throws 88. Like, let him go.
Right.
You know, but to know that my body's not going to learn by me telling it every single step that it has to make or trying to feel every inch of what my slider is doing or where my fastball release point is. It's just training and doing it. And, you know, in the training sense, working on the goals and being like, all right, did I hit my spot? Then I threw it right. You know, not was my leg too high or was my toe pointed down?
For me, it's always about the journey, never the destination, right? It's learning all those things. So today we say to somebody, what did you feel there?
Yeah.
We didn't know those cues
right.
even 10
right.
years ago, right?
Right?
It was just like, this guy sucks today.
Yeah.
You know, let's get
right.
him out. Rather than saying, hey, you know what? Keep that front side closed a little
yeah.
longer.
Right.
And that's tough.
Yeah.
But now you're back to throwing 92, 94 from
yeah.
the left side.
Yeah.
College is over.
Yep.
Now what?
I get one offer. And that is to fly to Trinidad, Colorado, which is on the southern border of Colorado.
Hell yeah.
Right in the middle. And throw a bullpen. It was not a job offer. It was, you're going to come out here. You're going to spend a lot of money. And, it's, you know, I'm a college kid. I don't have a lot of money. Go to Colorado. The coach picks me up. We drive 2 hours to the field. I didn't have pants. I thought, you know, professional baseball,
yeah.
maybe
oh,
they'd have pants, right?
No, they have nothing.
Nothing. I throw a bullpen, and this is my life. This is like, all right, I've got 12 pitches to really –
This is it, you know.
And they liked it. And I had been training, you know, with some of my old high school buddies, trying to feel that same stuff that I'd been feeling. But I felt like I had the mental skills to deal with that real pressure situation.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
It's not a lion coming to attack me, but it is that, like, oh, there's a lot on the line here. This was a long trip for nothing.
If that's what it's going to be, a long trip for 12 pitches.
Exactly. And so I threw well, and then I remember this so clearly. I start going in. I'm, you know, one of the late inning relievers.
Wait. So they signed you.
They signed me.
Okay,
yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Skip that part. So I start going in games. I'm the late inning reliever. I kind of had dropped my arm slot down a little. Got a little more movement. You know, it was one of those like, oh, let's see if someone takes this funky lefty, right? And I remember this so clearly. One of the other pitchers on the team says, you know, Dan, if you keep this going, you could probably get picked up out of here, meaning signed by an
Absolutely.
MLB team. And all of a sudden, all of that same feeling
came back.
And I had lost everything almost immediately. It was almost like he had, like, you know, hit that one spot on the, you know, in my psyche that just made everything kind of crumble.
Because it wasn't fun again.
It wasn't fun.
Thought of the stress and the pressure.
It was
and
what could happen. Not what am I doing right now? It was what could happen. And if I don't do that, it could be a disappointment. And
wow.
And all of a sudden it just went from, you know, like mowing guys down to hitting the backstop and spiking balls and, you know, head in my hands in the dugout going, what happened? And, you know, same sort of thing that happened in college. I would go back to my therapist. I would go and really try to work things out, and they would be temporary things. I was able to play two more seasons of mm-hmm. independent ball.
Mm-hmm.
Same sort of thing, fighting through periods of nobody can touch me and I can't touch the catcher. Those were kind of like the
yin
and the
yang.
You
were the type of guy that if I put you in a game, I had somebody warming up, just because I didn't know which Dan was going to be there
day. It was one of those things where I couldn't blame coaches for doing that because I felt that way too.
Oh,
it was.
Had to do
it. You go out on the mound and you go, am I going to get this done?
I've literally had guys with electric stuff that I'd have guys hot when they went in.
Yeah, there's a guy warming up next to me.
Literally, you know?
I can hear him breathing on my neck as I'm jogging into the field.
So you manage another 2 years. Are you able to have some fun again, or it's still the up and down?
Yes. And so my final year was in the Inter-County Baseball League in Ontario, Canada. I played for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, hell
which
yeah, okay.
Had the name before the hockey team. And it was great. And I started the year lights out.
Was that the league with like the Sherbrooke Expos and stuff?
Not when I was there.
Okay. Because I had three kids that I sent up there years ago.
It was a fun
Canada.
League.
Yeah.
You know, and we had a great time. I love Toronto.
Okay.
And, my first half of the season, lights out. I made the All-Star team. It was just a lot of fun. It just felt like, okay, if this is going to be my last season, which it always could be your last season, at least I'm having fun.
Sure.
At least I feel like myself. And then same sort of thing, just kind of those little things kept creeping back. And at this point, I kind of see other people that I know being drafted, going through the minor league systems, getting released. And I'm kind of going, I'm starting to feel like I don't want to do my lunges when I first get to the field. I don't want to do my bands after I pitch. I don't want to do the little things that I'd always done happily.
Sure.
And I start feeling this kind of like, I just kind of know
I'm out.
This is it.
I'm over it.
That was the thing. Is like I could, you and I could go long toss right now.
Right.
And I'll absolutely love it. It's like at that point, I was like, I don't even feel like long tossing. And that was a key to me that was not, it wasn't the same sort of this is the yips and this is a mental health confidence thing. This is a love of the game.
Athletes
what am
have
I doing?
To love the regimentation.
Yes.
The mundane daily routines that we do to keep ourselves healthy. But that's a great comment because once I'm out, you can't compete at that level if I don't do the work.
Right.
But I'm kind of over this.
Yeah. And at that point, I had recorded some music of my original songs. My now wife, who I knew I was going to marry when we were in middle school.
I want to talk about the music in a second, dude. Yeah. And your wife, because I want to hear about all this stuff.
Yeah.
Was music always something that you loved?
Yes.
Okay.
From the minute I started playing guitar on my 11th birthday.
Did music at any point help to relieve any of the stress while you were going through?
Off the field, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Because I could go, if I'm at Marist and I'm this high scholarship guy, I go absolutely blow a game, or I come in against, I pitched against Old Dominion, walked four guys, came out. That was my outing. I could go back to the hotel room, pick up the guitar, and the guys on my team could go, man, that's pretty cool.
So, again, for me, that's awesome because a lot of kids will do other stupid stuff like drugs or drinking or to try and lose themselves. So music has always been like a real comfortable place
totally,
for you.
Totally.
Okay. So now you're writing songs and now you can take me through, that part where – how music became so much more important. Tell me, I do want to hear about your wife and children sure.
So I am playing in Toronto. I'm going back to my room, and I brought a guitar, and I'm starting to write songs, and it just feels like, okay, this is something that I really enjoy doing. There's nobody trying to stop me from being good. I get on the mound, that guy wants to hit a home run.
Right.
And I was able to express, even in those songs, that feeling of, I know this is getting towards the end, or the anxiety that I felt was there to help me. And the more that I made peace with it, the more that I became friends with that anxiety, the less it tried to hurt me. Mm. And so I actually had a way of expressing that that wasn't necessarily talking to a therapist, talking to a friend. It was writing it down, singing it. It sounded good. You know, I was able to record it and produce it and have this product that goes, wow, this was like, I turned this really horrible mental
experience
into something, really something positive.
Yeah.
And I still play those songs today. I still sing
Amazing.
Them. People don't necessarily know that they're baseball related, but it's that feeling of, you know, I was able to get through this, you know, and it's like, you know, for me in music, people go, oh, do you want to do this? You want to play at Madison Square Garden and all that stuff? And it's like, that would be cool. I'd be down for that.
Right, right.
But
I'm not doing it for that
also
reason.
Know that I've had this one dream that quote unquote failed, and all I had to do was enjoy it the whole time. It's like, now I'm not going to mess that up with music.
Right, right, right.
You know, I'm going to just enjoy this.
Tell me about your wife.
So she is amazing. that period.
Absolutely.
She and I met in fifth grade. We were in the same fifth grade class.
Love that.
Somers Intermediate School. Friends throughout high school and college and all that. And nothing romantic ever happened, but she was there for me when I would go, you know, yeah, I'm pitching terrible. This sucks, you know. And she was in the Peace Corps in Guatemala.
Wow.
Right after college. Came back in 2015, and she and I started dating. And that was kind of my season in Toronto had ended. I came back. We started dating. By the third date, I said, I love you. You know, it was like one of the just knew. And that same way that I knew baseball was done for me, I knew that I was ready for this.
Funny side story. My older son was in kindergarten with his wife. They never dated until he was leaving to go to college.
Yeah.
And they ended up getting married.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It's just wild.
You know? And there's
wild.
Like, you know, there's no secrets.
They were friends, right? They were friends the whole time, right?
You don't have to hide your past.
You know all the good. Right. Exactly. Exactly. You know everything about that person.
Yeah.
So, okay. That's Danny. Tell me about Danny today, because that's really more, not that your life isn't interesting. It's incredibly interesting. Yeah. But for me, that was 18 through 24-year-old Danny.
Right.
Now we're married with kids. Two kids?
One kid.
I'm sorry. Married with a kid. And you're helping kids today. Is it just pitching lessons, Danny?
It's never
I'm assuming it's not, right? Because half of what I do is mental therapy on a daily basis for both athletes and their crazy parents.
Yeah.
Talk about it.
Most of the time I'm just sitting there with the parents doing a mental therapy session. No, but it's amazing because of my music schedule. I do mostly private instruction, small group, very flexible schedule. But I'm working with kids anywhere from 9 years old to college kids and sometimes beyond. And what's so valuable about my past, which is what I tell them, is like, it doesn't matter how good I was. It matters that I can help you either out of something that I went through, like that mental health crisis, or I can help you avoid it. And especially with my young kids, it's how do you respond to coaching that doesn't work for you? How do you respond to your shortstop saying just throw strikes? How do you turn things that are not helpful into things that are helpful? And
why is that so important, Danny? Because you're helping these kids get ready for life, right?
Yes.
Not just baseball.
Yes.
It's overcoming adversity on a daily basis. This is my why.
Yes.
My why is not to make every kid that comes in here a Major League Baseball player. It's unrealistic.
Yes. Right.
But I can help them through my experiences and the things I failed at to become better adults.
Right, and they get to know themselves. They go, at this point is when I get stuck. At this point, I need a little push. At this point, I need a little perspective. At this point, I need just a friend. And that, as a coach, is so fun to navigate. And you go, okay, how can I meet this child's needs? And with my skill set, one of the coolest things, and this is where I feel like, okay, I'm doing a good job, is the parents will say, hey, can we do 30 minutes of baseball, 30 minutes of guitar? you know, and you go, wow, this is amazing. Or they go, you know, and all of a sudden they go, because you are helping my child
right.
through difficult things
sure.
in a way that is valuable, we want more of that and in different situations. And now the skills that I have taught myself, that I've learned from my therapist, from other athletes
sure.
that talk about
sure.
mental health, it's like now I can pass that along to baseball players, but really just people. And people who can take that wherever they go.
That for me, you know, I think every kid that ever laced them up, right, they have the dream of being a big leaguer. And as we know, like, you know, 0.01, 0.02% of anyone that ever put on cleats and a glove gets that opportunity. But, you know, helping kids adjust to the pressure of their parents, school, getting into schools, getting into colleges, then performing at those colleges. And I'm not even talking about an athlete, just to
perform. Right, right.
But then beyond college, right? They're going to be parents one day. They're going to have children one day. Kid's going to get sick. Parents going to die. How do I deal with this stuff? How am I dealing with the adversity that's thrown at me every day? And you're helping those kids through that stuff. They don't even know. I mean, the
yeah.
truth is, at
yeah.
10 years old, 11
yeah.
years old, they have no idea what you're
right.
doing.
Right.
But you're planting those seeds to be so that they're able to help themselves and not go into that dark place.
Yeah.
Right?
And that, one of the biggest skills that I teach kids is to talk to me. Ask me when you're feeling like you're struggling with something, because that was something that I didn't do. Was I went, something's not right. I can't throw a fastball for a strike anymore. And I couldn't talk to anyone about it. I didn't know what was going on. And so kids being advocates for themselves is so important.
One thing that I say all the time, and we don't know each other. We met today, but I read it all over who you are as a person. You can't fake love and passion for what you do. You can't fake love and passion for other beings. You can see through that. Well, again, many people can see through that. For me, there's nothing better as the kids get older. You give them your cell number and they send you a text and say, hey, coach, you know, I had a great day. Here's what I did. Or I didn't have a great day. And
yeah.
what do you see in this video? Is
exactly.
there something, you know, that you see that, you know, maybe I didn't feel? What's next for Danny? Like, what do you, because you're still a really young
yeah.
guy. What do you want to do with yourself? I mean, where do you see all this going? Because you got a music career, you got a baseball career. You know, how do you do this?
It's amazing. And this is where, you know, my wife and I have an almost 10-month-old at home. And being her dad has just kind of blown everything out of the water. And so now everything is...
Just wait. It gets better, man.
That's what everyone's...
Oh.
Well, you know, and my wife and I always make fun of the, like, just wait. It's, you know, but when people say just wait, it gets better, that is, like, it's amazing. And it has. It's consistently gotten better.
Nothing more fulfilling. It's, the first time
yeah.
she says, Daddy, you're going to yep. crap your pants. Yeah, go ahead.
And, yeah, and so, you know, my wife and I have these conversations constantly about what does our family look like? Because I could, theoretically, rent a van, be out on the road playing shows for 6 months, and come back and do baseball lessons and local gigs and that sort of thing. But for the lifestyle that I want, for the family that I want, the family that we want, it's playing local gigs, touring occasionally, even as a family, and helping as many kids as I can in the areas. You know, I'm not playing gigs on Mondays and Tuesdays. So I go to kids' houses. I'm doing baseball lessons. I'm doing guitar lessons. Mm. And what has happened that I think is really kind of ironic with my whole baseball career was that I thought that everything would be, you're going to go to college, you're going to get drafted, you're going to go to single A, double A, triple A majors, ta-da, you're done, right? But now I have this really amazing opportunity to take it 1 week at a time.
What's really cool about that, but you got to be the right person for that, Danny, right? A lot of people want their trajectory to be this in anything they do, not
totally.
Just baseball,
yeah.
right? One of the things that I talk about, I have three kids, two of them were kind of this way. One of them is more like me because my life was like this. Wasn't a great student, learning disabilities. But I loved that about my life because I never knew what tomorrow was going to bring.
Right.
I was open to anything, always smiling, yeah. like, hey, man, the sun's out. Let's go. Like, what's
yeah.
the day going to bring?
You know, there are certainly moments where I go, oh, I just wish that every album I released, that there was another jump in the size of the venues that I'm playing. Or, you know, every song, you know, should have more Spotify streams. Or,
right,
you know,
right.
Still, I still fall into those things, but because I have a true partner in my wife who I can talk about this stuff to, because I have been through the shit that I've been through baseball wise, you know, I can bring myself back to what am I doing right now? How can I connect with the audience at a show? How can I connect with the 9-year-old in front of me or the 12-year-old who called me the other day to ask for a little piece of advice before his modified tryouts?
Yeah, you know, it's awesome.
It's like those are the things that feel important.
Where can the audience find Danny Zlotnick's music?
I'm everywhere. I'm on Spotify. I'm on iTunes. I'm on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. As long as you spell Zlotnick right, you'll find me.
All right. Well, once you stick your chest out a little bit,
yeah.
And the camera will pick that up. we'll have our tech guys add it to the bottom of the screen. Danny, this has been a pleasure, man.
Thank you so much for being here.
I thank you for your time.
No, thank you.
Love to talk to you again down the road. Thank you guys for being here again. Just a different episode. My platform is baseball, softball, because that's how you know me. This is all about life. The good, the bad, the ugly, but what makes life worth living? You guys have a great day, and I'll see you next time on 90 Feet Away.